Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy, powered by the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation. Today is February 7th, just so we know where we are. And yesterday, the 6th, marked the opening, the official opening of the new legislative session. So that's always the first Monday of February. And it begins with the state of the state from the governor. And so, you know, legislative filing was finished about 2 weeks ago. A lot of bills have been assigned to committee. We know who committee leaders are. But, you know, we have this, it's constitutionally mandated that we have a state of the state like this every year. And a lot is made of it. However, it's really just a suggestion for the way the legislative session can go. And so, Stitt, of course, was, you know, ushering in the first year of his second term in office. And of course, in his address, he had to kind of circle back and, you know, like revisit what he thought was going to be the high points of his administration and how he succeeded. And then he outlines what his policy proposals are. So I'm just kind of like trying to set the scene for where we are right now, because then on top of that, we've already seen like some committee meetings have already been held. And so Arnold and I today, it's just going to be the two of us kind of recapping Stitt's state of the state, because it was kind of special. I can't say much better than that, right? But it was not surprising. You know, I think anyone could have seen some of his policy proposals coming from a mile away. And yet it's going to be kind of interesting to see how it then aligns with what actually happens down the road this session, namely because, like I said, it's just a suggestion. He produces his executive budget, and that budget is just what he would like to see. The legislature holds the purse strings. They don't have to do any of it. So again, it's just Arnold and me today, and we're going to kind of go over this and see if we can properly set the table for what, as always, is going to be just kind of a ridiculous session. So Arnold, what were some things that stood out to you in the state of the state yesterday?
What stood out to me was that there were no surprises. We knew heading in pretty much exactly what he was going to emphasize. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these are sort of broad brush things anyway. Mm-hmm. But it was, there were really very few specifics, certainly that we didn't expect to hear. You know, he was a little bit specific on taxes. You know, he made clear that he wants to whack, you know, educators in this state. Mm-hmm. It was so pro forma almost. I was just amazed. And I was thinking, as he went down this litany of things that he claimed had been accomplished during his first 4 years in office, and promises, he wrapped them in a way of sort of saying, these are promises that we made when we ran, and this is how we delivered. And basically, all is well. Oklahoma is in an unbelievable position. It is the envy of the nation for business relocation, for example. And I couldn't, you know, this is going to date me, but I had this vision as I'm listening to this. I'm getting addled somewhat in my old age, maybe, but, you know, I have this vision of Kevin Bacon in his National Guard, you know, cadet uniform at the end of
Animal House,
with all hell breaking loose. He said, all is well. stay calm, all is well.
Oh my gosh.
This was Kevin Stitt, you know, standing there. The only thing would have been if he'd had a helmet and a uniform on. I mean, good God. It was, it certainly wasn't anything to write home about. But you're right. I mean, this is part of the problem. This is performance politics. This is performance art. The Constitution mandates it because it was mandated in an era where this was a significant event. You didn't have the kind of social media, for example, that we have today. You know, the online, everybody is so connected now, you know, and in those days you had very few ways of getting information. And this was a way to actually get serious information. And it's one of those things that's probably a relic and has outlived its usefulness. And there's nothing more absurd to me than watching all these people stand and applaud and fawn and carry on. And on the other hand, you have all the, you know, you have the Republican supermajority in the legislature that wants to stand and applaud that, you know, that all is well, because they don't want anybody to think otherwise. They want everybody to think, we got this, we got it covered, and you don't have to worry about anything. Go back to sleep. And then in 2 years, when you go to the polls, once again, over half of you vote straight Republican, and we'll just move on down the road.
You know, I think, you know, we saw a bit of this coming, you know, after the election in November when, you know, so in one line in his State of the State, parents spoke loud and clear at the ballot box last November in support of our vision to create more options for kids, you know, so like kind of this gloating, you know, gloating sense of self-importance that,
That's some pretty heavy duty bullshit though.
I mean, really it is, because I mean, he has a fucking majority in the legislature. So to act as if the mandate was somehow he was responsible.
He got a whole lot more votes than most of the Republicans, if not all of them, on the statewide ballot. Mm-hmm. So first of all, and over half his were just sheep who went to the polls and voted straight party Republican. Mm-hmm. So yesterday, in perfect timing, a new poll was released that was done by the Terrence Group, which is not a flaming liberal group. It's a rock rib Republican, longtime Republican polling group out of Texas. They, at the end of the year, after the election, mm-hmm. it, with full knowledge, of course, that Stitt and Ryan Walters would claim that this was somehow a mandate, 600 likely voters in Oklahoma were polled, and 74% said that they're opposed to vouchers. And that was a 13% increase over the numbers a year earlier, before Stitt and Walters made their case. Mm-hmm. So the fact of the matter is 3/4 of Oklahomans don't like this. And they, you know, and so much of it not only has to do with for-profit education, where we don't have to start down the epic road mm-hmm. here to know what kind of problems that causes, but I think religious education as well. And, you know, the fact that the voters just a few years ago, you know, stamped their approval for the strong separation of church and state, no public dollars into sectarian mm-hmm. activities, mm-hmm. you know, is... You know, they're trying to stampede the legislature into doing something here that I think the vast majority, even of legislators, know they can't sell to their districts, nor do they think it's a good idea for their districts.
So I looked at Speaker Charles McCall of Atoka's response to State of the State, because really, this is the marquee issue, you know, for education this year. I'd say second tier to that would be the renewed attack on, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion in higher ed now. So they're kind of like shifting their you know, mark. But so, you know, vouchers, the education, the ESAs, whatever they're called. And I mean, the worst possible situation, as we have said many times on this podcast, is, you know, rural schools will not benefit 0-1% at all from a voucher scheme of any way, shape, or form. And so this really breaks down to a rural versus urban divide. But the problem is urban legislators don't want it either. So, I mean, we are fine with our schools. Everyone seems to be fine with public schools except Forstit and Walters, right? I mean, and Greg Treat, perhaps.
And people anyways, who want to send their kids to private school, but they really would like the state to pay for it.
right. And oh, by the way, there's a new Twitter account and it's OK Vouchers or something. And it's a total spoof account about all of this. But anyways, but McCall's statement was as politically cautious as it possibly could be. He didn't come out just flaming or gunning against vouchers. I mean, it was the most cautious language you could imagine. You know, just being mindful of all options, just very, very careful. It wasn't in favor of vouchers, but it wasn't against, you know, vouchers. So it's like you could see him kind of riding the fence there. But I mean, at the end of the day, there is no winning for public ed. And so the fact that Stitt brought Chris Brewster from Santa Fe South as his poster child and as his guest in the gallery for school choice, when Chris Brewster takes much pleasure in poking public ed in its eye, like constantly throughout the day, I'm like, do you have a job? Because he is just on Twitter throughout the day, just poking public ed in the eye.
He's the actual K-12 equivalent of Ryan Walters in his car. You know,
yes.
Somebody's going to show Ryan Walters where his office is so that he can. And I will acknowledge, I did see that he finally put one of his rants on Twitter that was set in his office. But usually he's behind the seat of his car, so he's.
Yes.
I mean, who knows whether he's ever in the building over there. Even.
Right. I mean, what work is this man doing? And so, you know, so there's this, you know, very, very predictable attack, you know, through vouchers. And I think what really struck me reading through the text of this, the address yesterday was, you know, everything is old. Everything old is new again. I mean, because of course he's the one that referenced former Governor Henry Bellman, right? You know,
yeah, but you know, they the legislature has given parents choice.
Yes.
Parents have very wide latitude in the state to send their kids wherever they want to
right.
send
it's them. It's not a problem. It's just a matter of how you can get your kid to the school. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just everything that was on that laundry list was like, okay, so this is kind of a Janet Barisi redux, right? Like all these things have just been kind of repackaged. They have like a whole new, you know, like sheen on them. And then this, of course, comes in the wake of Ben Felder's story last week, where he very much outlined, you know, he just like in detail showed the machinations behind school choice in Oklahoma. And it is, of course, backed by the Walton Foundation, by the Kochs. And it involves none other than Jennifer Moniz, who, for those who don't know, she has a long record. I mean, she was on the Senate under working for Senator Bingaman when I was in the House 10 years ago. She went in to work at the state chamber after that, and then went to some think tank about education. And now she's in charge of Saxum, you know, their public affairs. So she gets all these state accounts. But most notably, this one that's trying to, you know, put a spin on school vouchers. And so that's why you see the fund students, not systems. And I'm like, okay, here's a little lesson, folks. You actually have to fund the systems to fix the individuals.
Pretty simple.
I mean, across the board, for all of the outcomes in our state, it's the systems that will help the people.
It's the system, stupid.
It's the systems, you know? So rather than thinking of school districts as, what did he say? We want to be not pro-government, but pro-people, actually. You know, kind of has to work the other way around. So anyway, so then, of course, there's the DEI attacks in higher ed. Yeah. So what was fun about that was, of course, it was 2 weeks ago when Walter's like, I feel like he's just like throwing a banana peel on the ground just to try and mess everybody up rather than really like do anything. But, you know, he put that that terrible letter out to Chancellor Garrett and, you know, the Regents office, the higher ed, Regents for Higher Ed's office, who he doesn't actually have statutory authority over, and required that she give him all, you know, line item budget of all spending in higher ed in Oklahoma on DEI.
I think he must be hanging his hat on his appointment as cabinet, as the governor's cabinet.
Yes, but there's still no.
I know there's no.
Yeah, there's no actual.
That's his defense.
Yes, and so I don't know if you read Chancellor Garrett's response, but I was quite a fan.
I think it's pretty clear that the higher ed regents didn't think much of that request.
Well, I mean, and it's a stacked bench. The regents are not, they're not nobodies and they're not idiots. It's actually quite impressive, you know, who they are.
The mere brashness, you know, of him making that demand and saying, I need 10 years worth of financials and I don't know what materials were used, and you got to get it to me in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it was less than a week. It wasn't 2 weeks. Yeah, so it's like, you know, just putting this out there, you know, it's Mike Turpin, Jeff Hickman, former Speaker of the House, you know, it's not, there's no slackers on that board. So anyways,
it diverts attention from the serious issue,
right.
One of the serious issues in higher ed, which is we're not funding it like we should be funding it. And we continue to shift the costs onto the backs of the poor students in Oklahoma.
Right.
Who end up leaving with a degree, perhaps, not always.
Right.
With such debt that they're never going to escape.
And we increasingly, overwhelmingly rely on out-of-state students to keep the lights on.
And we hire adjuncts because we don't want to pay. We can't afford, in a lot of cases, to pay the salaries of full-time permanent faculty.
I mean, it's a fact. Kids from Texas keep the lights on in Oklahoma higher ed. So, but the point that Chancellor Garrett made in her letter to Superintendent Walters, like whatever he wants to go by, you know, whatever hat he's putting on, you know, at the moment. But, you know, you know, she listed out all the communities and populations of students that are impacted by DEI initiatives, how it's not just courses and books and like workbooks that people, you know, are supposed to fill out. It's not trainings. Although there's plenty, you know, there's some of those as well. I say that as a higher ed employee, but at the end, when she was like, their accreditation in many places, relies upon the presence of these types of programs. Therefore, it's jeopardized if they're removed. And she didn't say sincerely. She didn't say, I look forward to talking to you more about this. She was just like, Allison Garrett.
Yeah.
I was like, good day, sir. I was so impressed, you know.
Of course, when you read his demand letter, which is you know, had misspellings in it what have we wrought here, you know?
I know. It's like, oh.
Do you suppose that he doesn't just have these two jobs, that he's not just the state superintendent and getting an extra 40 grand a year to be in the government, but that he's actually an Uber driver, that that's why he's in his car?
Maybe. All that would make sense. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Maybe he's dropping off Grubhub. Who knows? Doesn't make quite enough money, you know, with his two board gigs. God, I mean, I don't know, but the man is something else. So we like we have said for weeks, education is, you know, it's definitely targeted this session. It will be interesting to see where these bills go. And for our listeners to understand, like, you know, something's definitely going to get momentum when it is filed by Speaker of the House or the Senate Pro Tem. President Pro Tem. So if you see a Treat bill or a McCall bill coming out supporting vouchers, something definitely to pay attention to. You might see a lower ranking member, somewhat of a nobody, who will file one of these bills, and then the author changes, and if it becomes a speaker's bill or something, then you know it's, you know, you've really got to pay attention. So
is it a conspiracy theory viewpoint on my part? Or conspiratorial viewpoint, to think, you know, the president pro tem had his name on it from the get-go last year, and we had that late into the night, vote held open for lacking. hours, the whole bit, you know, and it failed. I don't think there's any question that president pro tem Greg Treat is still supportive and believes in this, but, you know, his wife is the odds-on Republican nominee for county clerk in Oklahoma County.
The stits showed up.
And I wonder if he is laying low on this issue in deference to, you know, trying to get her past that election.
Well, I would kind of look at it a little differently because, you know, there's these pictures out with Mr. and Mrs. Stitt standing with Marissa Treat and endorsing her. The Treats and the Stitts alike are both the progeny of Tom Coburn's office, Jim Inhofe, and, you know, obviously James Langford, because that's where Marissa Treat worked. So it would, I would be interested to see, because I don't think people quite get the connection between Senator Treat, that bill and school choice, and Marissa Treat as what is it, county clerk? County clerk. Yeah. Yep. Man, you guys, Oklahoma County is kind of getting a little bit of Norman craziness up there, because there's just some stuff like this. But anyways, I'm like, so we won't even go on the city council race. But I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how forward he is with that. But he's also got a floor leader in the Senate, you know, with Greg McCourtney, who I think is very much a soldier, right? Like, I don't see him countering Treat, right? I don't see him, but I do see McCourtney being a firm hand when, you know, if he brings bills to the floor or if he doesn't.
Yeah. And Roger Thompson, the senator who's the appropriations chair, has been pretty strong on some of these tax proposals.
Yes.
That would lead you to believe that he is a pretty sober, independent, straightforward thinker on some of this stuff as well.
He falls in line eventually, you know.
Well, he does, but
he does shoot straight about things when they come up. So it's Roger Thompson in the Senate as A and B chair. So Chairman Thompson, and then in the House it's Representative Wallace, but actually it's Chairman Wallace. So these are two other individuals that, you know, we would look to for guidance on what the budget might look like, which tax proposals will look like, because, again, they might start out with some small fry individual in, you know, one of the caucuses, but they will definitely, you know, the author will eventually become Wallace or Thompson if they decide that it's the policy, you know, position they want to take. And that's just how these things work, you know, like author changes hand, hopefully it'll give it some more life and then they'll keep it moving. But yeah, so Stitt called for repealing the grocery tax, which is an idea the Democrats had first, which, you know, a lot of advocates are actually against, because it would cut a revenue source in a state that doesn't like to raise revenue. But it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Don't you think that's a way to soften the blow for another proposed cut in the state income tax?
Yes, I just can't see how they work well together.
Yes, and also another cut in the corporate tax.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who benefits from the state income tax?
And that's the thing, because like I know our tax bracket doesn't benefit yet, so no, I don't know
Policy Institute points out this week, you know, that not only have we already in the last couple of decades cut, if you adjust for inflation and population growth, $1.5 billion in state revenue with our tax cuts, but two-thirds of that would benefit the top 20%.
Yeah.
Either of which you and I are.
No.
I mean, nor will we ever be unless we win the lottery.
Right. Like, it's just, I'm just like waiting for that year where I don't have to pay thousands of dollars on tax day to the state of freaking Oklahoma. Like,
but isn't it insane that we're talking about this again?
I mean, yeah, nothing new.
We know what the boom bust. You know, Kevin Stitt can say all he wants in his State of the State about how we've diversified the economy.
BS. We have absolutely not diversified the economy.
We're still way too dependent on oil and gas and ag. Those are the two things that drive the Oklahoma economy to this day. And we haven't made a lot of progress, unfortunately, in these other areas. So we're talking about cutting $655 million out again, if they bought his proposal, hook, line, and sinker, which I'm sure they won't. But clearly they would love to cut taxes. They think this is a wonderful thing. Forgetting, a lot of these guys were there a few years ago when we had 30,000 teachers and pro-public education supporters bringing the capital to a halt, basically. Mm-hmm. And with basically putting a gun to their heads, with Harold Hamm in the gallery, infuriated, clearly, to raise the gross production tax because things were so bad. Yeah, we're sitting fat and sassy right now, but there are a number of reasons why that is. And Oklahoma, you know, will be in the tank again before too long, because that's just the cycle.
Well, 2 points about that. Yes, we're sitting, you know, we're kind of fat cats right now, but it's thanks to federal infusions of cash. Nothing
from a Democratic Congress and a Democratic president.
Yes, no thanks at all to any sort of revenue generation by the state of Oklahoma. It is not our own tax dollars that have led to technically it is, but just not the way that they're portraying it, right? So, you know, Stitt's talking out of both sides of his mouth here in terms of, you know, look at our broadband and all these like infrastructure things that he's like praising that have jack shit to do with him or any sort of policy proposals or any sort of revenue generation or any sort of tax coffers from the state of Oklahoma. It has everything to do with ARPA funds and infrastructure funds from the federal fucking government. I'm sorry.
All of which our Republican congressional members voted against.
Yes. And yet he's still going to act like it was his idea. And so then what really kills me is the fact that he's bitching about Biden and so-called inflation. And I don't mean to talk down inflation because, yeah, shit's expensive right now. But he then wants to have a flat budget for all state agencies. So he's going to say everything's more expensive, and yet he's not going to pass any of that on to the state, the people who work in the public sector in the state of Oklahoma. So shit's more expensive, but you don't need the money to pay for it.
And of course, what that translates into then is that the taxpayers of Oklahoma are getting less and less services.
Yes. I mean, people will tell you.
Which is the reason we pay taxes.
Right. I mean, people will tell you they're blue in the face. A budget is a moral document. It tells you what your priorities are and what you care about. And the fact that he continues to starve state government but complaining about the federal government and inflation.
But that's why Grover Norquist was ready with his press release yesterday praising the governor for his tax proposals. You know, you shrink government to the point where you can drown the rest of it in the bathtub.
It's setting up failure, like predisposed failure, right? Like it's really just leading us to our own obsolete. But it's absolutely stunning that I don't know, just so much coming out of his mouth yesterday was him talking out of both sides, but specifically when it comes to inflation and yet, you know, starving state agencies, just out of spite, right?
Isn't that something for a preacher's kid with his father in the audience there to sort of, you know, this isn't just politics and spin. I mean, this is, right. You know,
right.
You're right. Talking out of both sides of your mouth is a nice way to put it.
Well, and then, okay. So education, the overall state budget. And then, I mean, the industries that he's talking about boosting up, you know, I mean, aerospace and defense. Okay. Well, shit, that, I mean, that stuff that can go belly up, you know, any freaking time, right? Like, we've already seen the American Airlines up and move, you know, their plants out of state. Canoe, right? He's talking about all these international companies coming to Oklahoma. Okay, let's talk about Canoe for a second. Yesterday, their stock was devalued to $1 per share.
Yep.
And this is who he's hanging his hat on.
Yep. And a lot of the companies that he mentioned in his State of the State were here long before Kevin Stitt.
He didn't have anything to do with him. The Amazon fulfillment centers, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. Google stuff, that was a Mary mm-hmm. Fallon thing. Mm-hmm. But American
Dell,
Airlines.
Dell.
Yeah, those have nothing to do with him. I mean, at least he could have painted it as Republican successes instead of his own. I don't know.
It's all about him. He delivered.
Yep.
Remember that. It's very yep. Trumpian in that respect.
Absolutely. So diversifying our energy grid to embrace our more of everything approach. It's like, just put all the cheese sauce on everything. I'm sorry. I just don't understand. Let's see. Oklahoma ranks fifth in the nation for natural gas production and sixth for oil production. Okay. And what do they do for the state? They freaking fleece us, oil, you know, natural gas on our energy costs.
Oh yeah, don't get me started on utilities.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, that's a whole it's a fleecing is mm-hmm. That's the right word. That's exactly mm-hmm. what it is.
But we're somehow supposed to praise the people, sing the praises of the people that are trying to bring us down to our knees, right? Oil and gas, like shit. I'm sorry, but where was this? Where was he last year when he was, you know, vilifying the president for gas prices when we had people on our own borders that he could have been going to, you know what I mean? Like, although it would make just such a tiny dent in the price, but anyways, so the same companies that are just bringing people to their knees financially, we're supposed to somehow, you know, be beholden to them. Oh, okay. Infrastructure. ARPA. Hello.
Yeah.
Bridges, yeah. Rails, and runways to broadband. Man, that has
no. Well, and frankly, when you start talking about defense and aerospace, the reason that we have those industries here is because of our military installations. And that's yep. federal tax dollars that
right.
support and those things.
And he mentioned fortifying our military installations or like building them up or whatever. So, and it's just like, you know what? You have nothing to do with that. Those are federal installations. The federal government will decide if they stay or if they go. Period. Because Oklahoma City has been on the precipice of this plenty of times, right? Like yep. whether Tinker stays or whether it goes.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay. And then the universities and higher education, good Lord. So, okay, here's another piece. When he talks about OU and OSU to grow and deliver a quality education, dude, to 40,000 students. We don't have the campuses for 40,000 students. We don't. We're not a UT Austin. You know, University of Iowa, where I got my PhD, you know, they had 20,000 students on campus, but it was much bigger. Like, just the sheer logistics. And again, he wants to decrease or keep flat the budgets for these institutions and these agencies, and yet he wants them to do more with less.
But it sounds visionary. That's what I'm saying. This is performance politics. Mm-hmm. This is not reality.
Well, and then not
the way you build great research universities.
He should go to a campus of a great research university and see exactly what that looks like. When we were at UNC Chapel Hill,
all that goes on there is liberal indoctrination.
Whoa. Oh my God. When we were at UNC Chapel Hill, mind blowing in terms of the scope of that campus, right? And just these huge, beautiful buildings dedicated to like genomics. There was this whole building, genomics alone. You would never see that shit. No one would ever land grants like that, those sort of federal dollars here. We just do not have the capacity for it.
Which doesn't mean we can't have top,
rate. It just takes investments, right? Yeah,
imagine that.
Right. Okay, and so can we talk about what he wants to do with career tech?
Sure.
I don't know if I quite understand it, but again, it's asking for more with less. Yeah. But I mean, it's literally a crown jewel in our, like pre-K and career tech are crown jewels in the Oklahoma education system.
Absolutely.
Things we should 100% be proud of, highly successful. And then somehow he's got to tinker with it. So
what they need is support. They need financial support. Mm-hmm. Because right. It's true. You know, one of the problems, going back to the Frank Keating days, Frank Keating, he wanted to change the K-12 curriculum so that every kid was college ready. Well, not every kid's going to college.
Right.
And I will tell you, I can write a pretty sentence, but I have trouble screwing in a light bulb. I can't wrap my mind around what folks who go through career tech do.
But it's highly skilled what they do.
And I pay them a lot of money if my plumbing goes bad, if my electricity is, if I've got electrical problems in the house or whatever. You know, we need to support those in ways that we've just, like everything else, we've gone on the cheap. And, the problem is with the leadership we've had in the last two decades, much of the last two decades, this century, at 23rd and Lincoln, is you have a band that is driving the agenda that knows the cost of everything and the value of nothing. And until Okies wake up and say, wait a minute, let's talk about this and let's rethink this, then, it's going to continue to head down this path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean.
How's that for deflating? Oh, well.
I mean, there is no way that we literally cannot do more with less. You just can't. No. I mean, call it stone soup, like whatever you want to do. Like, you just cannot create. I mean, if we're looking to other, he didn't make a reference to Texas, which was great. Like in terms of, I just remember him saying, talking about, I believe it was Texas's rainy day fund sort of thing, and how we should aspire to have. I was like, okay, their GDP is like, oh my God, is so much more than the state of Oklahoma's. They have 10 times more population. They've got 5-ish major metropolitan areas. We've got 2. Like, there's just so many reasons that, I mean, you're comparing apples to oranges here, but it's just like, if we want to, look for aspirational peers, maybe Arkansas, right? But I mean, he's like, they're, it's just absolutely insane what he sets his sights on, and yet completely pulls back on the gas, and the gas being the state budget. I do remember Senator Thompson, saying, you're going to save our way to the poorhouse. A few years ago, and it really feels like that's where he's trying to lead the state this year. So, I mean, I don't think budget talks will be peaceful this year at all.
No, I don't think so. It's going to be fascinating to see how this all shakes out. One of the things that's going to play into this that probably is not getting the attention that it deserves, but if the voters approve recreational marijuana, you know, that suddenly is a new revenue source. God, what were the numbers? I saw the numbers over the 4 years, if it passes, the estimates are $4.3 billion in sales. And that would generate, based on how the question is, state question is written, $821 million in new revenue. You know,
I mean,
think about what you could do, education. I would argue, I know, you know, Stitt wants to talk about failing schools in Tulsa and blah, 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 for whatever reason. I think you can make, it's not hard to make the argument that Oklahoma gets more, way more than it invests out of public education in this state. We really 100%. Do quite well considering, think what we could do. And, you know, and I know the other side always argues, all you guys ever talk about is money. You just want more money. Well, let's try it one time. We did actually try it one time under Henry Bellman. If you want to focus on the reality of the Henry Bellman era, as opposed to, you know, the nonsense that the governor included in his state of the state about more school choice, you know, which the legislature has given parents to make, you know, to put their kids wherever they want to put them. You can transfer. If a school has room for you, you can get into it, or you can send them to a private school on your own dime.
Right.
But, you know, I'm at a loss. I'm at a loss for words on this whole mess.
You know, it just makes me wonder, like, because I don't know how his kids were schooled, right? How Stitt's kids were schooled. Like, what I think I know that they didn't go to public school.
Right.
But I just kind of wonder, you know, these prestigious private schools. I don't, honestly, I hesitate to say prestigious. I'm just going to say private schools.
Right.
Because I don't believe any of them offer anything better. Other than, well, and it reminds me of a bill that I did see today. But anyways, you know, what schools could his kids get into if by anything else in the virtue of their name? You know, I mean, and so, sorry, it just reminded me of something. Representative Randleman, who's I kind of have some problems with him because he is a school psychologist and he has actually run bills, you know, in favor of conversion therapy. So really, really problematic, some legislation that he's run. However, he has a bill this session calling for OSSAA, so who oversees school activities, to basically segregate private and public schools so they compete more fairly. And I mean, really, like, I know Bishop McGinnis has a good football team, but I'm like, Jinx is not, you know, I don't know. It's kind of interesting to me, but that's kind of an interesting crack in the veneer, right? Like, to me, just like, I'm kind of interested to see where that goes.
Yeah. And well, that takes us down a whole other rabbit hole, but yeah, there are other things like that, that are quite interesting that you could see play out this legislative session. And you know, I have grandkids. Mm-hmm. I have a grandson who's quite an athlete and is making decisions about where he's going to go on to high school.
Mm-hmm.
And has sort of, you know, an opportunity private school wise. You know, I'm not saying he's being recruited, but I remember, you know, my youngest son, you know, a big old offensive lineman, you know, was recruited to Cassidy. And we took the tour and did all that stuff. And he said, this isn't for me, which is, you know, which is all well and good, but that stuff goes on. It is not a level playing field from that standpoint. So I get that whole, you know, I get that whole argument, but I also think, you know, there's some other things that, you know, I had a long list of, for example, election-related bills that are on the agenda. You know, everything from Senator Warren Hamilton's no relation, thank God, that I'm aware of, bill that would really, you talk about monkeying with the ballot initiative process, you know, with the processes of initiative petition. You know, he wants a resolution. He's got a resolution that would increase to 66%. You'd have to have a 2/3 majority of Oklahomans to pass any initiative petition, which is insane. You know, it's absolutely, yeah. And I don't think it's going anywhere, but it's out there. That's the point. And it also would limit, as I understand it, a ballot initiatives to only appearing on the ballot in odd years, non-election years. So nobody in the legislature would have to appear on the ballot, for example, at the same time that, there was a cockfighting proposal on the ballot or some marijuana related proposal or something like that. So the point is Republicans have not been happy with the way folks have used the initiative process since they've taken control at 23rd and Lincoln. And they're trying to figure out ways. I know Hamilton is basically considered an outlier. You know, he's not a heavyweight by any stretch of the imagination in the legislature.
But he's definitely not.
It's just the kind of thinking that we see out there. And I think there are going to be efforts to rein that in because there's been a lot of unhappiness, whether it's Medicaid expansion or whether it's medical marijuana or criminal justice reform. They've slow walked that since voters approved that stuff. That's out there. You know, there are actually some good proposals, though, which, of course, are not going to get a hearing. Representative Dollins has HJR 1023, which would put ranked choice voting up to a statewide vote. He also has HJR 1024 that would create an independent redistricting commission, which we were headed toward before COVID hit, and that I think the voters would approve. And they probably would approve ranked choice voting. It makes sense. That way you don't have to spend a fortune. You know, unlike Warren Hamilton, who wants to add another series of elections that are going to cost the taxpayers money in off election years, this thing would save taxpayers money and would make it easier on the voters, really, because then you don't have to keep going back to the, you know, and no, and people aren't turning out for the runoffs anyway.
Right.
You end up with the extremists who are driven to vote for extreme candidates. And that's why you end up a lot with the legislature that we have. And then you've got Senator Boren has a proposal to eliminate straight party voting, which, you know, Democrats should have done when they could see the handwriting on the wall that the state was turning Republican, and they didn't do it. And they're paying a price now. But Republicans don't want to get rid of it because they've got the system rigged in their favor at this point. So, but those are things that ought to be talked about and ought to be considered. And the voters ought to have a chance to weigh in on it. But they're probably not going to get the chance. I'm sure there's not, none of those are going to get a hearing, I wouldn't think, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I definitely, you know, have a hard time seeing a Dollins bill or a Senator Boren bill, you know, moving. Senator Hamilton, you know, same thing too, like, but it's just a shame that the legislature is where good ideas go to die, you know. But it's also a shame to see, you know, rural legislators push these HJRs, you know, these ballot measures that would overwhelmingly counter their own interests, you know, their community interests, because, you know, there was John Michael Montgomery or whatever his name is, you know, he ran the bill, was it last year, the year before that, that made it drastically harder, you know, another one to pass a ballot initiative. And it's like, okay, listen, I know, you know, maybe Comanche County or, you know, Southwestern Oklahoma, you know, like, maybe they don't get as many signatures down there, but the bills that have passed overwhelmingly benefit, or I mean, I'm sorry, the ballot initiatives that have passed overwhelmingly benefit these communities, You know,
the fact is that they live in fear in a lot of these communities that the cities are running them over.
And it's like, but the thing is like, you know, I wonder if like, if we attached like an issue to a legislator, you know, and that would be a way to get people to turn out, right? Because our turnout is so poor, but we see, you know, people turn out for these ballot initiatives. So again, Medicaid expansion, right? By the, you know, just the skin of our teeth. But it's just like, okay, so somehow if you could like, but again, that's what happens. And that's the reason why, you know, recreational marijuana wasn't put on the November ballot, because God only knows if it would have turned out the way that it did. Because it gives something, it's something that people care about. You know, it's just like, oh my God, you know, you see the holy rollers all upset about it, but it's like, you know what? Is it really worth the prison sentence? Like, you know, it's just these are measures that would benefit these rural communities instead of incarcerating their community members, right? Like it would benefit people who are poor versus incarcerating them, which is what currently happens.
But, you know, the prison industrial complex is worried that,
yes,
you know, 100%. It's going to lose its steady stream. And I'm not just talking about prisons and the people whose businesses supply our correctional facilities here in Oklahoma. I'm talking about the district attorneys in Oklahoma, too.
Yes, you know, 100%.
This is a loss. This would be a loss of power for them. 100%. And they've already lost some power on this with criminal justice reform, and they don't like it a bit.
I mean, oh, you know, along those lines, we should probably follow up soon with an episode on the new AG is doing, because
yes,
I mean, definitely seems to be a new sheriff in town, proverbially speaking.
Well, he himself used that phrase when he took office, and yeah, I mean, he's done some things that I just shake my head and think, oh gosh, you know, he's playing the game, you know, some of this joining with other AGs, Republican AGs nationally to sue the Biden administration and that, you know, that kind of nonsense that goes on. But when it comes to the stuff that's really important, I mean, we'll see how it plays out.
Yep.
But yeah, that's for sure. You know, there's going to be stuff that I don't think obviously we can even imagine that's going to flare up during the course of this.
I just had to bring up, I looked at one of Dom's bills, Senator Dom's.
Oh my God.
And I mean, he literally has one that would prohibit employers from implanting microchips in employees as a condition of
employment. Yeah. Yeah. He's got,
really tinfoil hat territory.
Yeah, I call them dumb ass bills. And yeah, you know, I mean, it just, God. You know, it's just, yeah,
there's crazy shit out
Lord
there.
Lord, my God. It's just
I'm like, everyone should just buy drinks for the legal staff up at 23rd. Just like every night, like, here's some shots, guys. Like the crap you guys have to put together.
So, how about Representative Justin Humphrey's latest?
Oh God, I haven't heard about it.
You know, Mr. You know, women are hosts.
Yes.
You know, Humphrey, who wants to reduce cockfighting penalties from a felony to a misdemeanor, and you know, down to where, well, you might pay $1,000 or $2,000 fine.
Oh my God.
instead of 10 years in prison. And I mean, the voters made pretty clear a few years ago how they feel about how barbaric cockfighting is. And yet, you know, and maybe this is
around the edges.
You know, he's probably got a lot of that going on in his part of the state, would be my guess. Uh-huh. And so he's playing to his pals down there. And I'm sure he doesn't think there's anything barbaric about it. But in the civilized world.
Well, you know, I can tell you this, like the cockfighting stuff happened the year we moved to Iowa. And it was just the craziest thing, because they had a governor, a gubernatorial election pretty quick after we got there. And this is when President, soon to be President Obama, was like stumping for people around the country as senator from Illinois. And to hear their candidates talk about reproductive rights and not crazy ass things like cockfighting as like, you know, gubernatorial platforms, it was just like, oh my God. Like, of course, Iowa has taken a hard right turn since then, but it was just like, holy shit. Like, this is like a whole other universe, you know? Like, I remember Scott Inman would always talk about what's the thing where they file the horse's teeth? Do you know what I'm talking about? It's something that Representative Reniger knew a lot about because since he was an animal vet. But just right. Like, I don't know, but just like the things that come up in our legislature are just like, what in the world?
Yeah.
And what I really think about is the fact that Senator Bullard, who has Senator Bullard and Senator Daniels, I think, specifically Senator Bullard, who, as we mentioned in a previous episode, is a former high school government teacher.
Government teacher, yep.
AP, he taught AP history classes in high school AP classes. And he right out of the gate, the Senate Rules Committee was looking at legislation. I don't think I'm wrong, but I'm not 100% sure, but they were looking at legislation that would ban gender affirming care for minors. And I just think, how many votes did that man actually get in his district to have such an outsized impact on all 4 million Oklahomans?
Well, and he also is the one who wants to take Oklahoma out of the business of accepting federal funding for education. Mm-hmm. And, you know, apparently without any sort of recognition or acknowledgement that that's how we pay for special ed programs. Mm-hmm. That's how we pay for school lunches. That's, mm-hmm. you know, you just start down the list of things and you think, well, you know, it's a good news, bad news situation. The good news is he's no longer in the classroom. You know,
yes.
Talk about it, indoctrination. I mean,
and you
know,
I don't.
The bad news is he's now in the legislature.
Yes. And I don't actually know if he's gotten any legislation passed, right? Like, I should just do a search and find out, like, is there any of his bills that have been signed by the governor? But this man is a menace when he's probably only been elected by 1,000 or so people from his district. Is just, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. He's not Joseph Silk's old district, is he?
Or Senator Silk's old district? It may be. Silk was from down that way. Yeah. Yeah.
I just realized that would make a lot of sense. at least they're consistent down there. Yeah. Brian talked to Atoka Cole and other parts of Johnston County.
Yeah. Well, again, it all depends on who gets out to vote.
Yep.
And,
yep.
You know, and who bothers to register on top of that, you know, that
yep.
We're scraping the bottom of the barrel on that.
Yep.
A lot of bottom 10 for Oklahoma, unfortunately, despite the governor's proclamations that all is well.
So his Wikipedia page, Senator Bullard, he's vice chair of the caucus in the Senate, which I'm like, oh, Jesus, why are you giving this guy a platform? But anyways, like, I mean, that's some power there, right? But anyways, his Wikipedia page, it has already been updated. In 2023, Bullard made news for submitting the proposed Millstone Act of 2023 to the state legislature, which would declare a state of emergency and criminalize gender-affirming health care for any trans person under the age of 26 years old. Already on his Wikipedia page. So, yeah. Well, I mean, we know it's going to be... It's going to be a ridiculous couple months.
Yeah. And the sad fact is that I don't really see a strong movement to actually solving the problems that people in Oklahoma face. At the end of the day, we're not seriously talking about major investments in our educational system. We're not talking about major investments in mental health and in other healthcare. You know, all these things that would really transform Oklahomans' lives and would create the opportunity for us to be a magnet for business expansion and investment. You know, the kinds of things that would make Oklahoma truly a business-friendly state. We're not seeing any of that. We're seeing a lot of talk, all hat and no cattle, as we used to say.
When yes.
Texas, you know?
Yep. So, I mean, the culture wars, we don't have serious policy discussions.
No. And so at the end of the day, probably what we'll see is there will be some atrocious bills that will make it through. The state will spend a lot of money, you know, defending them in court. And somehow at the last minute, a budget will get passed and we'll go on down the road and we may very well once again feather the nest of the 20%. I would say the 1%, but, you know, in light of the fact that the top 20% get the lion's share of, you know, the tax cuts, I think we're probably going to see that. And then somewhere before long, you know, this gravy train that we're sitting on, it's all coming to an end. And we're going to be right back where we were a few years ago. God, you would think we would learn from these things. You think we'd learn from the Kansas example, you know, where Sam Brownback, mm-hmm. you know, drove the wagon off the cliff with his supply
literally,
side, you know, trickle down economics. And the people up there rose up and said, hell no, we're not going to do this. Yep. And since have twice elected a Democratic governor and have reaffirmed abortion and reproductive rights in that state. And, you know, a lot of our roots are from Kansas. You would think that the intellect here is just as high as it is there, but somehow we're a little slower to come around on these things, I'm afraid.
Well, I guess we'll just have to see. Oh my God, my allergies are driving me crazy right now. So,
there's lots to talk about this session, and
as always, nothing boring about.
There's going to be no shortage. There's going to be way too many things and too little episodes we're going to have. But we'll do our best to stay on top of this, and
and
see what the governor succeeds in getting through. You're right. Most of the time, governor's budgets are File 13 material.
At the end of the day. We're not too far away from him getting the reminder. You know, it's the literally the legislature saying we controlled the purse strings.
Yeah. And we'll see too, if the legislature has the cojones to reel in some of the power that they've ceded to the governor in recent years.
I
haven't seen any evidence of that yet, but I know there's a lot of grumbling. So,
if
it's fractious throughout this session, you may see a lot more of that.
I think it would be highly amusing, even though there's legislation out there, you know, again, banning care for transgender individuals. There's bills, you know, for the school vouchers, although I haven't seen them. But, you know, all the things that he line items in his state of the state to really see what happens in the legislature to make those things happen. Right. And if they'll do it and tie it to him. I could see them being like, you know what? Nah, pass.
Yeah.
Because it's a spiteful place.
There are a lot of egos.
And they've got long memories, and I can really see someone, if they don't remember Stitt saying in that news article, I didn't know I had to ask Mother, may I? It'll be fun to see what happens.
For sure.
Yep.
For sure.
All right. Well, Arnold, we'll figure out the next episode. So
we will. We yep. will. We'll look forward to more rollicking conversation.
Yep. Have a good. If you like what you hear on ObserverCast, please tell your friends about us. Also, if you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org.
You also can support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. To help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in our 53rd year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners. Only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate.
Finally, we want to thank Norman's Jared Deck for the music you're listening to today. You can download his albums at iTunes and learn more at jareddeckmusic.com.